Welcome back to Head Games Radio on Sports Byline with Robert Quinlan Costas, born March 22nd, 1952, although he looks much younger, mother of Irish Catholic descent, father of Greek descent, raised as a Roman Catholic, but a man that has converted many people who are not essentially great sports fans to sports over the last generation. Bob Costas, again, an honor to have you on the show.
Nick, how you doing?
I'm doing great. And first of all, just how busy are you? I mean, we see Chris Collinsworth wearing about 16 hats these days. You're wearing about 20.
Well, the football season has suddenly turned out to be my busiest time of the year because now that NBC has added Sunday Night Football, you've got that, and then the HBO show on Wednesdays. And my own show, Costas Now, is only a quarterly program, but there was one as recently as September, and there'll be another one in December on HBO, but it's certainly not every week or even every month. But when all those things come together in a week where there's a Costas Now and a Football Night in America and an Inside the NFL, then people might think, gee, I'm seeing this guy everywhere. Plus, you never know what's on tape. You never know what interview of me ESPN Classic has or what special that I might have sat down for an interview a year ago, and all of a sudden this is the week that it airs. And so there can be a bombardment of Costas at various times of the year, which is why after the Super Bowl, I kind of go off the radar screen for a while, and other than the Derby and the Preakness for NBC and the U.S. Open Golf and one or two Costas Nows, I'm basically not on the air at all from the Super Bowl until September 1st. So that's when, A, I recharge, and B, let the people who might be getting sick of me get away from me for a while until they're not so horrified to see me again when the next football season starts.
Bob, wouldn't you say that the profession of sportscaster, and it really doesn't do it justice because you're so well-read, but it's a humbling position because there's always someone who's not happy with your opinion. There's always someone who's not happy with how you look. Has that gotten to the point where it doesn't matter anymore, sort of like a player getting used to playing in front of 80,000 people? After a while, it just becomes the background?
Well, you have to understand that while criticism always comes with a territory for any public figure, that's always been true, the atmosphere has changed in that respect almost exponentially with the advent of a certain kind of sports talk radio, a certain kind of cable TV culture and tone, throw the internet in. And so the people who are the snarkiest or the most mean-spirited or want to just launch ad hominem attacks and think that qualifies as commentary, those people are everywhere. Look at the tone of political campaigns today. It doesn't have to be true. It doesn't have to be fair. It doesn't have to make sense. Just take a shot at somebody. And so when that's the atmosphere, I would think that if Jim McKay were around today on the air, or if Vin Scully were just starting out and he was doing national broadcasts, make a list of the people you most admire, whose work is most deserving of respect. Even they would have some people taking pot shots at them. And in many cases, it says much more about the people doing the pot shotting than it does about those at whom it's directed. None of us is above reasonable and constructive criticism. But a lot of what's buzzing around in the whole culture today, not just about sports or about broadcasting, but about everything, is some combination of mean-spirited, uninformed, and stupid. And no reasonable person would take that to heart. You have to be open to constructive criticism. You have to be critical of yourself. But you don't need to take to heart every bit of nonsense that's out there. And there's so many more places for that nonsense to show up now because there's so many more outlets. So you have to take that into account. Otherwise, you'd lose your sanity.
Yeah, and I think also those journalists like yourself that are in it for the right reasons, which is, I think, to convey an entertaining but hopefully reasonably profound, insightful portrayal of reality so that people can see the world with all its colors. They can see the drama itself, and they're able to take the ego out of it. Walter Cronkite comes to mind, obviously, is one of the great figures in that as well. But in the last couple paragraphs, you use the phrases ad hominem and pot shotting. So I like the fact, Bob, that we can create and enlarge the English language even as we make our points. Not too many radio shows probably have both those in the same paragraph. But let's talk about, just for one more second, your background on Long Island. I had those three glorious years on, with the Jets, and the last two with Richie Coatside. I think we were like 4-28.
It builds character, Nick.
it built a lot of character. If that's about character, that's what it built. What was it like for you growing up on Long Island with your exposure to the media capital of the world itself, the Yankees, the Mets, the Knicks, et cetera, and how that influenced the way you go about your job?
Well, it's a good question, because that was a perfect place for a kid who was interested in broadcasting and interested in journalism to absorb a lot of it. This is the pre-ESPN, the pre-internet days, but there were two teams, at least two teams in every sport in the New York area, so you had all these radio broadcasts, all these television broadcasts. A higher percentage of games at that time were on local TV in New York than in most other cities, and a very large percentage of the top New York broadcasters were truly legendary figures. Mel Allen and Red Barber and the young Vin Scully and Marty Glickman and Lindsey Nelson, people like that. And so even though I never tried to copy another broadcaster, they instilled in me a love not only for the games, but of games well-described, broadcast with a high level of craftsmanship and talent. And so that drew me in. And as I said, I never copied them, but I became interested in what they did, and I took note of how they did it, and I think that helped to shape me.
Well, I want to cover a lot of things, and we've only got a short period of time, so forgive me, but I want to jump around to your comments vis-a-vis some of the other wonderful people we've had on this show. Starting with last Thursday, we had Sir Charles Barkley, another very shy person who has a lot of trouble expressing himself. And
right.
Charles was asked, Bob, about this new generation of NBA players.
I do. I think for a few years ago, it wasn't very good basketball, but they were letting all the high school players in, and they had a lot of talent, but they didn't know how to play. I mean, Kevin Garnett, Kobe Bryant, and LeBron, exceptions. I think it's always better for the lesser players to go to college. I think David is the best commissioner in sports. I thought the dress code was fantastic, because young black kids can't dress like that and get jobs. And now there's always going to be a double standard for the NBA, because it's considered a black league.
So let's jump to our first sport, specifically the NBA, and what Commissioner Stern has done and how you see it benefiting from his leadership.
Well, generally speaking, he's done a tremendous job of marketing. For all of his excellence, you have to concede that the timing was great for him, because during his commissionership, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, ultimately Michael Jordan were all in the mix, and that helped to popularize the league. And then you had very significant characters on a level just beneath them, the Charles Barkleys, the Isaiah Thomases, the Karl Malones, the John Stockton's. The league was just brimming with appealing, interesting, dynamic players and personalities. And on top of it, there was a long stretch in which the best and most appealing players were consistently getting onto the sport's biggest stage. It seemed like almost every year, the Lakers with Magic and Kareem and Pat Riley at the helm, or Bird's Celtics, or then Jordan's Bulls, were getting to the finals, and they'd be playing the Pistons, or they'd be playing the Phoenix Suns with Barkley, or the Utah Jazz a couple of times. I mean, you cannot arrange these kinds of matchups on a regular basis, but it seemed to always happen for the NBA. So when people talk now about, is LeBron James the next Michael Jordan, first of all, I don't think there'll ever be another Michael Jordan. There won't be the combination of factors that allowed that to happen. But first of all, LeBron and the Cavaliers have to get to the NBA Finals. Until that happens, you don't have those kind of iconic moments that fix a player and fix a team in the public's mind.
We're going to go to a break, but I want to add one of Charles' comments, which is with the advent of ESPN and its pervasive and amazing, thorough coverage of sports, now we're entering into an era where if a guy has one good game or one good week, he's suddenly, quote, a superstar. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about the so-called superstar ethic and culture in sports in this country and why we're getting our rear ends kicked around the world with Bob Costas, probably the most decorated sports journalist of our time. We'll be right back in just a second. You're listening to Head Games Radio on Sports Byline.